Kapitál. Mesačník, pri ktorom sa nedá relaxovať.
Ahojte, zdravím vás pri novej epizóde ekologického podcastu Klimax mesačníka Kapitál. Moje meno je Laura a spolu s Matejom sme si v rámci čísla Kapitálu k téme vyvlastnenia pripravili rozhovor s berlínskou iniciatívou Deutsche Wohnen Enteignen. Táto iniciatíva stojí za úspešným miestnym referendum, ktoré sa venovalo téme nedostupnosti bývania. Rozhovor s jedným z aktivistov, Chrisom, viedol Matej a môžete si ho prečítať v printe alebo na webe Kapitálu a teraz si ho aj vypočuť ako podcast.
Thanks so much, Chris, for accepting our invite to do a little interview with us. So once again, thank you so much. Welcome.
Hello. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, very happy to do so. And so, as we already talked a little bit about it, I think most people here in Slovakia will not even know what Deutsche Wohnen Enteignen is, and we are going to talk about that. But before that, I think it's fair to talk a little bit about what Deutsche Wohnen is, because I think the campaign or the citizens' initiative sort of reacts to what the company is doing. And I think a lot of people will not even know what the company is. So if you could talk a little bit about what Deutsche Wohnen is, so that the translation would be German living, if I'm correct. And if you could give us a little like insight into what the company is, what they do, how they operate.
Mm-hmm. Deutsche Wohnen is the biggest landlord in Berlin. It's a real estate company. Like there are a lot of companies around in Europe. And yeah, and it's the biggest in Berlin, and or it used to be the biggest in Berlin, and it used to be the second biggest in Germany. What happened quite recently, and you might have heard of it, that the other real big one real estate company in Germany, Vonovia, they just bought Deutsche Wohnen. So so practically the two biggest real estate companies just merged. But Deutsche Wohnen is in Berlin. It's pretty pretty special in comparison to the rest of Germany, because they don't have that much flats in the rest of Germany, but really a lot in Berlin, like I think around 110,000. And what they why they are special is then in 2005, and also a bit earlier, but in a big amount in 2005, the city sold a lot of its property in housing. So because they were in debt back then, and Berlin is a quite poor city, and it also used to be one. So they brought the city owned, or they sold the city owned flats, and Deutsche Wohnen basically brought a lot of them. And back then in 2005, gentrification was not that much of a topic, or at least not in Germany, and rents in Berlin were pretty cheap back then. But due to this financial crisis in 2008 and so on, that changed a lot. And they began like this big investing in housing in Berlin, where old flats got brought pretty cheap and modernized, and then sold or rented again for a lot of money. And also what we can see in Berlin is that there are a lot of people are moving here as well from inside Germany, but also from all over the world. And so before Corona, there used to be 60,000 people coming every year new to the city, and not 60,000 left. So the population grew, and of course, there at some point there were not enough flats left, and so this whole renting issue become a real big topic, and finding a flat in the first place become a real hot topic in Berlin. Yeah, and what makes Deutsche Wohnen special? It's not the worst landlord in Berlin, but it's the worst one of the big ones. So, and like all this housing companies, which we address with our initiative and the referendum, they own in total at least 16% of the market of flats in Berlin, and so they have real power. So if they do a thing that will reflect on other smaller landlords, and that's why it's important to confront them if you want to change something in Berlin.
Okay, so if you mentioned that they are the worst of the biggest landowners or landlords in Berlin, can you describe what it actually means and what position does that put the company into, like the position of power that they are in? Because as far as I'm concerned, here in Slovakia, we don't really have companies that would own like tens of thousands of flats at the same time, at least not yet. Most likely that's going to happen in some years. But I guess the same things will follow here as well. So what power do they have if they own like so many flats?
Yeah, it's you can imagine like if they increase their rents in some parts of their own houses in some districts. So private landlords that might be just own one house or two houses and so on, they could increase their rents as well. So they follow them. They're an example. Also, if you want to go like to maintaining flats, so they're pretty bad in maintaining flats, and that's also some at least are part of their model how they work. So they let the houses pretty much get dirty and broken and don't repair things and so on, so that people move out and they could modernize and sell it for more money. And that they're really in a lot of their houses, conditions are pretty bad, I would argue. And yeah, they don't care. So it's also like always like a joke in Berlin, but it happens every winter in houses, especially at Kreuzberg, at Kupferser Tor, which is a pretty popular space in Berlin. They're also in the Deutsche Wohnen houses, the heating breaks down for several days and they sometimes need up to a month to repair it. So I used to live there too, and I didn't live in the Deutsche Wohnen, but in a house close, and a friend of mine lived in the Deutsche Wohnen house, and she always came to us to shower because they don't have hot water for like whole December or something. And this is pretty everyone in Berlin knows this practices. So that reflects also on other landlords. So now they always take the example of the big one. And another point, which is for a lot of people a real thing, is like I live now in a Deutsche Wohnen flat, and it's like every month, like circa 170 euros just go to some investors for nothing. So from our rent, and we don't know these people. These people don't know us. We have nothing to do with the house, but the profit. So and yeah. That's really something thing that upset a lot of people in Berlin.
Right, and so before we get to the like organized, I don't know if we can call it a resistance. Is there anything that people as individuals are able to do against a company of this size if their, as you mentioned, like their heating is broken, or their rent suddenly goes up by I don't know how many percent? Is there anything people are able to do on the individual basis, or is the like sort of like a combined resistance the only answer to that?
Of course, there are some institutions in Berlin, like the Berliner Mieterverein, that can help people to some degree. It's basically checking if you could go about courts and stuff to get, or to they write letters so, and to some point you can of course do something on an individual level, but this happens all the time again. So and a lot of people don't react individually, and that use becomes a problem. And so it's really a structural thing in Berlin, and it's also a pretty more structural thing in some spaces where a lot of Deutsche Wohnen house, and others might be less, but some, especially in the inner city, in districts which used to be at least more popular or where more workers used to live, and this happens really a lot, and the houses are in bad conditions. So out of this, the first, I would say, collective resistance with which had Deutsche Wohnen in particular as a target evolved, and there used to be something like Deutsche Wohnen Mieterin Protest, which means in English, Deutsche Wohnen Tenants Protest Initiative, and they started this whole thing to drag Deutsche Wohnen I don't know what's in English right now. So, but in popular debate, so they dragged them into before. It was the biggest landlord in Berlin, but no one really heard of the company, and they did really good or bad PR for Deutsche Wohnen. So, and that's how the whole thing started. And over the years, that finally evolved in our campaign, which.
And so would they even respond to these protests, or would they just completely like try to ignore them and hope that they would just blow over?
Both, I would say. So in some cases, there have been a few pretty successful renters or tenants initiatives that I would say that won on their particular individual field, but there are also really a lot of things where they used to win because they have the better lawyers and so on. They're pretty used to it, and it's also, I would say, they also calculated in their plan for the year that to some extent some renters will sue them, and they have to pay a lot of money. But in a bigger picture, that used to be at least this practices they won out of it. So it used to be not happen that much. It changed actually due to the success of our initiative and referendum. So they are a little bit I would say a bit more careful now with what they do compared to maybe 4 years ago, something, because they are a lot in the debate, and so I think they're kind of scared, or they're at least careful that they don't do their old practices too much, so that they don't extract bad reputation.
All right. I think we're getting really close to it. Very soon, we'll start talking finally about the citizens' initiative of Deutsche Wohnen Enteignen. Before that, could you describe a little bit more what does life look like for low-income, let's say, families, elderly people, students, refugees, people of other minorities, etc., when they, let's say, move to Berlin, or even if they've been living in Berlin for 50, 60 years, elderly people. What are their living conditions there at the moment?
I think the main problem is that people that used to live in the inner city, which were, like I said, this district that used to be workers' districts, now become, like in every big city, they become hip, and all the world want to live there, and so rents increase. And at some point, people need to move. Or let's say you want to start a family. So you get kids, you need a bigger flat, you need to move. And there's practically no possibility to find a new flat in this district, like Kreuzberg, Neukölln, Friedrichshain, and so on. So you got to move to the outer city. and to find a flat there is also pretty hard at the moment. So, and the rents are sometimes also pretty high. So, yeah, if you wanna find a new flat, you really need to have a lot of perseverance, I would say. And so most people in Berlin just don't think about moving there. If you have a flat, you're gonna stay there, because you know it's just a pain in the ass to find something new. Sure, and that leads to this typical picture of gentrification. So, like, let's say poorer people got dragged to the outer city, and flats or rents in the inner city just increases, and the inner city becomes not. Or people always say Berlin is so. What is cool in Berlin? It's that it's cheap and kind of provisional and so on, and that goes away. So it becomes just another city more and more.
Okay, so I think you already mentioned that Deutsche Wohnen and Teignen initiative started, I think, around 2005, if I'm correct.
No. That's when Deutsche Wohnen brought their portfolio.
Oh, okay.
No. So, the initiative started. There are some different positions of this, but at the end of 2017 or in the beginning of 2018.
Okay, so can you take us a little bit through the history, like how did it start, where did it start, who started, how did you people organize, and I think we will end up with the referendum, which is pretty like famous, but let's talk about all that happened before, because I guess there was like a lot of organizing before that able to happen.
Yes, like I said, for years or decades, you could say there has been a quite good housing movement in Berlin. So you have like in the 80s and 90s, you have this whole squatting scene, and then that evolved in this rent topic that came up in 2005 and so on. And I would say Deutsche Wohnen Enteignen or initiative is a product of a lot of fights that have been in the city. And it's quite kind of a success. So we pushed things to a next level. So, but this didn't happen out of nowhere. It evolved out of former movement. And the structures that kind of founded Deutsche Wohnen Enteignen is this before mentioned Deutsche Wohnen Mieterin protest, and also a left wing political group called Interventionistische Linke. I don't know if they are known in Slovakia. I don't think so. Yeah, we call them EL, but they used to do a lot from the beginning till now, but also a lot of smaller initiatives. Maybe not just one organized house. They all came or grew into this initiative at some point. So. Yeah, but I would say the two big structures are this Mieterin protest and this EL group. So, but also a lot of people who are just there on their own, like me. So I just dripped into on my own. And yeah, the idea in the beginning, someone had this idea, some lawyer or so, that there's in the constitutional or an article in the constitution, article 15, that allows socialization in favor of the population, so, and not of companies. And that's pretty interesting, because this article never had been used before in Germany, and I would say most people forget that it actually exists. And but that guy, one guy, had this idea, and he used to be in a citizens initiative, which is also, at least in Germany, quite famous. Gotti & Co. They also kind of founded Deutsche Wohnen Enteignen. And they had this idea, okay, could we use this Article 15 politically to say, okay, Deutsche Wohnen as the biggest landlord needs to get expropriated. But back then that was all just about, I would say, discourse politics. So no one imagined back then that there would be a referendum at some day where most of Berliners say, yeah, this company needs to be expropriated. So yeah, but it was the idea to combine this with this quite popular thing in Berlin, Volksentscheid, which is a referendum. So I would say that this, yeah, it's used in Berlin, but it's not that common thing in whole of Germany. But in Berlin, it's quite it's quite progressive, the laws to do a referendum in comparison to other regional states in Berlin, in Germany. So and it had been successful in the past. So yeah, someone had the idea to combine this article and the expropriation of these big landlords with this this weapon, I would say, of Volksentscheid or referendum, and that's how the idea was born in some dark back room of a bar in Kreuzberg, so with 8 people in the beginning, and then it evolved this idea. So you have to do it's kind still kind quite bureaucratic to this whole thing till you get to the actually referendum. So you have to do a first phase of collecting signatures to get recognized in the first place, and that's like 20,000 ballot signatures in 6 months. That phase started in 2019. That's also when I joined our initiative, and back then that was, I would say, we were about 60 people. And it's funny because when on my first meeting, I thought, wow, this is pretty big here. 60 people from all different ages. So I would thought, okay, that's a big thing already. But yeah, back then everything was pretty chaotic and not very, very planned. We just said, yeah, okay, let's meet there and there and collect signatures. So, but somehow we made it in 4 months that we collected even more. Then this 20,000, more than double, or let's say, no, I would say triple of what we had need to collect. So that was pretty successful, and I would say at that point was the first time people in our initiative really started thinking for the first time, okay, maybe we could really win this, and it's not just about discourse. Maybe there's something more to get. So we started to take this whole thing a bit more serious than up to then, and use the next time. So you could imagine you win this first phase, and then the city government has a lot of time to respond to this. So, and they took over a year to respond to this, and they checked if this is if this is in okay with the constitution, what we want to do, and how could we make and debate it in the Senate and so on. And we used this time to build like structures in every district where we can rely on when the next collection phase would start. So we had like this groups in every district, Kiez teams we called them. Kiez is a German word for like a few streets, so it's a neighborhood, you could say. So, and we made these neighborhood teams, and they were responsible and they had to plan this whole collection process in their area, in their district basically. Yeah? So, where to get logistics, and so where you could get lists to collect, where you get of the material you need, and so on. And where people can meet to go for collecting it. So I would say, I don't know how we managed, but I would guess Corona was in favor for us back then, because a lot of people had a lot of time from one moment to another and didn't know what to do. So they joined our initiative, it was everything was online back then, and somehow this idea got really big with these kids teams. And then finally, pretty much 1 year ago, a bit more, the second collection phase started. So we were pretty well equipped back then. I would say we were like 2,000 people. So I could say we grew in a bit more than 1 year, from 60 to 2,000. So it's a lot. And they went on the streets collecting signatures for 4 months we had then. And then this time we needed to collect 170,000 valid signatures. So if you count it down to today, it's like 1,400 signatures a day. So pretty big thing. But we kind of made it because we have so much people active. Maybe, and I would say, ARC, this is the biggest the biggest reason for our success, is that it was pretty easy to get involved. Yeah. So on the lowest level, you just print a list out of the internet and just ask your neighbors in your house, on your floor, if they want to sign. So that's the easiest part to take part, and then it goes up. So to at some point really joining the initiatives plenum and so on. But due to this way of working, we really got a lot of activists who were on the streets all the time. And it was pretty cool because we had made this some purple vest that was kind of our signature sign. And like when you went in this month through Berlin, basically every day you saw this purple vest all the time. So it was, we were just very present in the city. People came up to talk, and so we made this our goal, and had I guess 360,000 or even more signatures in the end, at the end of this 4 months. So
like 200,000 extra signatures, more than
yes, yes.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, it was really crazy. We are the most successful Volksbegehren. It's in Germany. It's kind of like this. The small referendum, or let's say this phase you need to get to do the actual referendum, and never before so many people signed this, so it was quite intense. And then was clear when we won, okay, in 3 months later this referendum will be, because there also have been like the big federal election in Germany and Berlin election, so it made sense to put it on this date as well. And we spent those months like really going into dev talks with people. So we made a lot of canvassing, so door knocking, talking to people, and ask them if they're gonna vote with yes. And that was also, I would say, something that we've been very successful with. And we also made a newspaper and did just this normal standing around with material on the streets. And I don't know how, but somehow we really won big. So we got more people voting for us than for the city's parties that are now the government combined, or close to at least. So it was pretty successful.
Okay, and so the referendum was coming up. How did you personally feel on the day of the referendum?
I would say that was one of the best days in my life I can remember. I feel very happy, because this whole thing took so much part of my life in the last few years. And I knew that for a lot of people who are active at Deutsche Bund and Icon as well, it's the same. So we were there at our election party, let's say, and with like, I don't know, 200 to 300 people of us, and had this big screen and waited for the results. And it was quite intense. So, and then then at some point it was clear that we not just won zone, but we run really big, a lot more than we really expected. And this, I don't remember any other day in my recent years that I felt so happy.
Just one more question about the referendum, maybe. When we hold referendums in Slovakia, the questions have to be very specific. So was the question like, should the flats that are owned by this company expropriated? Or what was the question that the people were voting on?
The question, if I remember correctly, on this paper, was that big real estate companies with more than 3,000 flats these flats got socialized and it got to be transferred in a thing called Anstalt öffentlichen Rechts. It sounds quite complicated. I know it's I don't know a good word in English, but it's a formula of law, which is the owner, and it's about, you can imagine, it's a thing that is not owned by the state, but also not private owned. So it's a kind of a collective thing, and it allows to, or at least we think it will allow to manage this flats in a really big democratic way, and about councils and not just some CEO shit. So yeah, that's why we choose that.
Mm-hmm. And I think the referendum, it was like 59%,
yes.
A little bit over 59% voted yes.
Yes.
If I'm correct. So what happens now? It's past referendum is actually over a year right now. Half a year. So what has happened and what do you expect to happen in the close future and even in the far future maybe?
Right now it's a quite thrilling phase. You have to see that most of the government or parties in the government are not very happy with we winning this thing, and they try a lot of things to actually make this thing not happen. Of course, so many people voted in Berlin, and this topic is a real hot topic. If you wanna govern the city, you can just ignore it. So they just cannot say, okay, it's not possible, we didn't make it, which they used to make with other referendums, but with this it's just not possible because there are so many people standing behind this. So they made their coalition choice. So in the Berlin government is Social Democrats, Green Party, and the Left Wing Party, and they couldn't agree on a thing. So Social Democrats are, I would say, 95% of them are against us. Green Party, you never know. Some are for us, some are not, and they are quite opportunistic, so it changes on every day. And the Left Wing Party is, I would say, 95% in favor of a referendum. So, but they couldn't agree on how they go on. So they just went for the way to put their whole decision 1 year in the future. And to do so, they agreed on founding a commission of experts who talk about how to really get a socialization in reality. And that, or at least that was the point of the Left Wing Party, the point of Social Democrats, where I talk about, is this constitutional at all? Which they also, the funniest thing is, they also did this checking already between the first and the second signature phase, because if you are not constitutional or right, you can't just start the second phase. So it's kind of weird, but they do everything to get rid of us, and now they we do it about that way, and it's quite clear to that they want to use this commission for us getting lame, losing our momentum and so on, while they invest or put their energy into building new houses or new housing. But yeah, I guess that won't work, because of course it's needed to build new houses in Berlin, but also there's pretty less space left, and it's been for years so that new houses are not, or they're so expensive to build in Berlin that it just makes not sense for investors to sell or to rent them to lower income folks. So they just could not afford them. Or let's say if you are just have a decent job and you're a nurse or so, you just can pay a new flat. It's just too expensive. So the way how social democrats want to solve this thing will actually not work. And therefore, I think this whole socialization topic will stay hot, and they just cannot get rid of us how they're gonna plan or what they want to do right now.
So it's basically, if I understand correctly, it's still on hold. Basically, they're just figuring out what they can do, basically, yes, but would prefer not doing anything.
What I just did. They said this commission will begin to work in the first 100 days of the new government. So that was last week. They didn't start to work, but just a few days before, they said who gonna be the experts. And the three ones that came from the Social Democrats are actually all lawyers or just people that are juristen in Germany. I don't know what it's in English, but people that are firm with juridical things. They nominated three guys that are really old, and what is interesting, that are part or at least close to the Conservative Party in Germany, and two of them already made in the past clear statements that they are against socialization. So it's obvious that Social Democrats are not interested in clearing if socialization is possible or not, but in actually, get rid of it. So
finding ways basically how to like take it off the table.
Which is quite funny, because this Article 15 in the first place got in the Constitution through Social Democrats. So they bury their own history basically right now, or want to do so.
I think I'm going to have basically like one of the last questions for our interview. And that's what I found really interesting, that you actually had the word expropriate in actually the name of the initiative. How were people reacting to it? Because of course this was before even the corona, and like way, way before the war started, when we are right now at the moment seeing like quite different approach of even like some political elites to expropriation, at least of like Russian oligarchs and their assets in the West, which just a couple of weeks ago, if you mentioned expropriation to any like high-level politician, they would like want to sue you probably right away, whereas now they're seriously considering it. So let's remember, this was like a couple of years ago, but how did people react to the word expropriate? Like were they skeptical of it, or did they actually like the idea?
It's different. Of course, we had, I haven't been part of the initiative at that point, but there were a lot of debates if you could name this thing Deutsche Wohnen Enteignen and not, or just rather Deutsche Wohnen Vergesellschaften. Vergesellschaften means socialization. Through German law, it's two different things. But we choose Enteignen because it is a lot more popular, populist, and it kind of forces people to react on it. I mean, it's basically because of German history. So yeah, you with the GDR, I think it might be a similar discourse to be in Slovakia. So a lot of people say, expropriation, that's something communist, that's from the dark bad days where we can't do this anymore. So it evokes hard reactions, and but I would argue that was needed, that our name gets in a debate, because we were kind of provoking. If we would settle for Deutsche Wohnungsgesellschaften, most people pretty much wouldn't know what we were about. So yeah, and when we were collecting signatures, I would say most of the people didn't care that much, because the situation on the rent market is so hot in Berlin that people do not have a problem with the first term and really getting this companies expropriated, because they feel expropriated themselves by these companies. So now they just take so much rent, and it's just a pain in the ass to deal with them. So people are pretty fine, or at least people who live in this or in the flats of this country. There have been, of course, some people who say that they don't think that expropriating is the right thing, and you have to be more with regulating. But I would say, if you're debating on the street with people what we are really about, not just taking flats and give them to the state, but to do something whole new with it, and our whole democratic concept of managing these flats, people get a lot more in favor of what we're doing, and actually get a real picture of what we're doing, not just taking away. So yeah, but yeah, of course you have those people who say, oh, that's all this bloody old socialist methods, and we want to have this, and so on. Of course, I would say due to we were quite successful, and where I would say had some kind of hegemony in discourses in whole Germany, we might have getting expropriation that made this term a bit more popular, I would say, than before. So you really could see that the discourse changed a lot. So like, yeah, getting to start to expropriate things for the population is not that uncommon anymore than it used to be years ago. And another thing which is quite important, and that is also, I would say, also reflects this thing what you made with this Russian oligarchs, is this expropriation. It's also, or at least in Germany, expropriation basically happens every day, and it's a quite common thing, but it never happened, like I said, in favor of the population, but in favor of companies. So when you wanna do another coal mine, it's no problem at all to expropriate whole villages. If you wanna build a highway, it's no problem to expropriate some farmer and so on. So in I think another big success or discourse success of us is that we put that in the debate, in a popular debate, that expropriation for companies or big companies and for money and so on happens every day, but not in favor of the people, and that we are, let's say, first trial to change this on a very democratic level, because we made this referendum, and every Berliner, well, not every Berliner, but every Berliner that is viewed as a Berliner by the state law, is possible to vote for it or against it. So, yeah, I would say that was kind of a game changer. And I would argue that this thing with the Russian oligarchs is the same way. So no, if it's in favor of elites, they say, yes, expropriation is wonderful. If it's in favor of the people, then probably not.
Yeah, and I love what you said. It's basically taking the tool of the powerful people who use it every day against the people into people's hand and taking basically back what originally was or should be theirs. Anyway, on that note, I think this is the best time to end our interview. Thank you again so much for talking to me. And that's it. Thank you so much and see you soon then.
Okay, see you soon. Bye.
Počúvali ste Capitalks, podcast angažovaného mesačníka Kapitál, ktorého vznik podporuje Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung so zastúpením v Českej republike. Viac článkov nájdete na webovej stránke www.kapital-noviny.sk, kde nás môžete podporiť napríklad objednaním predplatného. Ďakujeme.